Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The higher the temperature rises, the more we crave the chemically manufactured cool of air conditioning. But my guest today says our love affair with AC is far more costly than we stop to think. And it's changed us, our way of living, our homes, our places of work, in ways that can look sharply out of sync with the world to come. This hour on Point, reconsidering the AC. You can join the conversation. Are you addicted? Could you, do you live without air conditioning in the summertime? And what's the bill for your home, for us all, of air conditioning? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook, at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Wichita, Kansas, is Stan Cox. He's a writer, plant geneticist, and senior scientist at the Land Institute, a nonprofit focused on agricultural research. His new book is Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Our Air-Conditioned World and Finding New Ways to Get Through the Summer. It's published by The New Press, hits bookstores next month. Stan Cox, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
I don't want to be sanctimonious. I'm sitting in an air-conditioned studio right now, and if I weren't, I guess I'd be sweltering. Awful lot of people using air conditioning without thinking what happens when you hit the on button, Stan. Paint a picture for us. Millions of, you know, sort of fingers reaching out to the thermostat of the on button this week. What's the consequence behind all that cool air blowing up?
Well, the big incentive for reducing our dependence on air conditioning is to try to pull out of a kind of a warming spiral in which we're using much more air conditioning now than we did even in the mid-90s. That's producing greenhouse emissions, which will accelerate warming of the atmosphere, which means we'll become even more dependent on air conditioning in the future unless we do something about it. But there are many positive incentives for withdrawing from air conditioning a bit as well. And those include things like restoring our connection to our neighbors and in the natural world, and improved health, more resilient economy. A book that was simply calling for outlawing air conditioning probably wouldn't get very far. But what I've tried to do in the book is describe how the benefits of getting off of air conditioning, and how once people start seeing those, we may pull farther and farther out of it.
Well, look at that whole picture. You definitely made me think back, way back to childhood, when air conditioning was by no means so prevalent, and how summer had an entirely different feeling to it. I want to go there with you and look into the future as well and possibilities there. But just so that we have a sense of it, Stan, I mean, give us an idea of what portion of our overall energy consumption goes to staying cool, to air conditioning.
Well, most air conditioning, almost all of it is done with electricity. Almost three quarters of electric generation is with fossil fuels. So the emissions from from air conditioning today are the equivalent of every household in the country acquiring another vehicle and driving it 7,000 miles a year. Or you can look at our electricity consumption for air conditioning is approaching half a trillion kilowatt hours per year, which is as much electricity as the entire continent of Africa. All billion people in Africa use for everything.
Do we spend more on heating or cooling at this point?
Well, heating takes more overall energy because we have more. We have longer, colder winters in part of the country than we do really hot places. But most heating is done by directly burning fossil fuels, whereas air conditioning is mainly through electricity. So it's closer in emissions. But one opportunity we've missed is in the great migration of people from the snow belt to the sun belt over the past 50 years. could have meant a pretty big reduction in energy use because people wouldn't have to be heating homes through those cold winters y'all have in New England and the Northern Plains. But that effect has been canceled out pretty much completely by increased use of air conditioning in the Southeast and the Southwest.
When you write about how air conditioning has really remade our demographic map so dramatically, you say we could have saved on that heating in the North. On the other hand, without air conditioning, it's impossible to imagine the enormous growth in populations we now see in, you know, Atlanta or Houston or certainly Tucson.
Right. I spend the first chapter of the book in Phoenix and in Southwest Florida, two places that for pretty different reasons are would not be what they are today, obviously, without air conditioning.
Remind us how, when air conditioning first began to come on the scene, how people received it. How was it marketed and how it was received by folks who had always sweltered through summers or, you know, sat on the porch or got out the fan?
Well, it's hard to imagine today, but it wasn't something that people immediately thought, hey, this is going to change my life for the better and embrace it. It was considered kind of a novelty at the beginning, and people who were around at that time will remember that movie theaters were the first place where much air conditioning was used, department stores. And of course, the incentive was to lure in customers. The very first use of comfort air conditioning as opposed to manufacturing was, appropriately enough, at the New York Stock Exchange. It started out in these places where large groups of people gathered, and it was really just in the years after World War II that room air conditioners became another appliance that people were encouraged to buy. In fact, the electric utilities themselves used to sell air conditioners because their big problem at that time was that they had a higher peak load on the power plants in the winter than they did in the summer because people burned more lights and so forth.
Sure.
So they wanted to encourage electricity use during the summertime to even things out. Of course, now summertime peak energy use is almost all because of air conditioning is far, far higher than the winter peak demand.
What is the penetration of air conditioning in American homes at this point?
Well, of new homes being built, about 92% are air conditioned, and it's in the 80s over the country. The South, of course, led the way. But in the past 15 years or so, it's been the West Coast states and New England that have had the most rapid increase in the use of air conditioning.
And you're also looking very much globally here, anticipating what happens when and if, and I guess it's already happening in large number, India plugs in air conditioners all over the place, or China, a lot already, but there could be much, much more used in those cultures.
A survey that was published in December showed the city of Mumbai, India, one of the largest cities in the world, 20 million or so. It's a coastal, very muggy, humid place that 40% of their electricity consumption now is going to air conditioning, whereas a decade ago it would have been almost none. That's having and they're predicting in India from 2005 to 2020 that there will be a 12-fold increase in the electricity consumption for air conditioning. And a country like India that is already staggering under power shortages in the year after year, especially in the summertime, this means trying to find more ways to generate power, and often to the construction of hydroelectric dams, which flood area. In India, if you flood a river valley, you're flooding thousands of farm families off their land. So it's creating a bigger and bigger rift between the city and countryside.
And what does it mean globally if we end up trying to air condition our way out of the discomfort of global warming?
Well, it's going to mean, according to some surveys, that the demand for air conditioning worldwide amount of heat people are experiencing on average will increase by about two-thirds by later in the century. The EPA and Centers for Disease Control in this country are projecting much higher rates of heat waves and stronger heat waves in coming years. We know that air conditioning has reduced death rates during heat waves over the past couple of decades, or at least some studies show that it can be thanked for keeping some people alive during heat waves, but it has not eliminated deaths from heat. And we know that the main reason people die in heat waves, it's usually in northern cities, in parts of those cities that have very little vegetation, a lot of concrete, usually people who are older, who perhaps for fear of crime won't open their windows or go outside. So it's having air conditioning available is kind of putting a Band-Aid over a problem that we're going to be making worse.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about our, addiction to air conditioning, what it costs us, and how we might back away from the AC. Stan Cox is with us from Wichita, Kansas. He's got a big book coming out just a couple of weeks here. It's called Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Our Air-Conditioned World and Finding New Ways to Get Through the Summer. But lots of callers for you, Stan. Let's go to Gloria in Augusta, Georgia. That's nice and warm. Gloria, thanks for calling.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
It's nice to get through. I would just like to say that I am a lifelong resident of Augusta, Georgia, and we've had a heat wave here for the last 6 weeks, mm-hmm. and I haven't had air conditioning since in the last 10 years.
Do your neighbors think you're crazy?
I don't care what they think. My power, I used only 280 kilowatts of electricity in my last electric bill.
So how do you do it? Do you putting a damp cool washcloth on?
I have the original window fan that my grandmother had when I was a child. It was from the 50s. And I have fans, but I live in a humongous house built in 1916, and the downstairs, and I have half a dozen trees, very much shaded downstairs, and it's cold as it can be downstairs.
And
I can get by with the window fans.
It sounds great in a nice old-fashioned way. When you look around Augusta, how common are you, Gloria?
2 degrees.
Are you the rarity these days, not using AC in your town?
I think that there are other people now, due to the fact that all of the utilities are raising rates, and due to the economy, that people are having to get by and not use it as much.
We know it's an outlier, but the pressure's there. Gloria, thanks for your call. Stan, there's Gloria in her big old 1916 house in a grove of trees, and she's got her fan on, and no AC, zero.
And if Gloria can do it, I think any of us can do it, because I grew up in Georgia, and I know what it's like there in the summer, and it's disturbing when I go back to my hometown and go down streets on a warm summer evening, when normally, when I was growing up, it would be kids everywhere, almost an impromptu block party, and now it's as uninhabited as it would be during the Super Bowl with a sleet storm going on.
We'll have to talk about new construction, though, and whether it really works perhaps as well as Gloria's 1916 house when it comes to heat. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, you're on the air.
Mr. Cox, I really can appreciate what you're trying to do, but there's no way in ATLO I would ever live without an air conditioner. I've lived in New Orleans, Nashville and Chicago my whole life, those three cities. And I promise you, they get as hot as any cities in the world. But you will be glad to know that I did marry a wife, marry a woman that feels the same way I do about in the winter. We don't use heat. We cut the heat on when we take a bath in the morning and when we take a bath in the evening. Other than that, so we do save a lot of energy in the winter month because we don't use the heat that much. But I cannot live and will not live without an air conditioner. Yeah, well, have a good one.
Thank you, Carl. Stan, what about it? Carl says, no way in hello. It's going to work in Nashville or New Orleans, or for that matter, Chicago, which can boil your socks off in the summer.
Yeah, I realized when I wrote the book that there would be at times the response kind of like the gun rights debate. You can have my air conditioner when you pry it from my cold dead hands.
Right.
And but there are ways to use air conditioning more strategically, and I think we'll later in the program find out more about that. But we are going to have to, one way or another, deeply reduce our residential electricity consumption. There's no way to get around it. We all of the renewable energy that the country is currently producing from solar, wind, biomass, et cetera, could increase fivefold in the coming years. And it would still not be sufficient to supply our air conditioning needs. So we're going to have to cut back. If you have a second, if you take a family living in the south central states, that is Louisiana, where our last guest has lived, Texas, Arkansas, or Oklahoma.
Okay.
Say the family wants to reduce its electricity consumption 35%. So this is a mythical average family in that area. They 35%. They could stop using air conditioning. That would do it. Or if they wanted to keep the air conditioning running and you can interrupt me if I go on too long, but they would need to unplug and not use the washer, dryer, freezer, dishwasher, electric range, microwave, toaster oven, coffee maker, TV, DVD player, laptop, printer, fans.
Now, to do what? To offset right. What, Stan?
The electricity used by air conditioning and all of their electric lights. Now, that's in one of the hotter parts of the country. It would be a different – you'd be able to turn some of those things back on, say, in the upper Midwest or the Pacific. But in the hotter parts of the country, that's the kind of choices that we'll have to be making.
If you turned off all of those things, it still wouldn't offset the AC consumption. But you talked about reducing it 35%. How? By just turning it off a third of the time?
Well, now I'm saying you could reduce your total residential electricity consumption in that area by turning off the you could reduce it by 35% by turning off the air conditioning.
I see. Now, here's a Facebook comment from Carson, Stan. He says, AC is a must, and I figure, he writes, there are ways to offset the damage. So what about that? What about more efficient air conditioners? Or what about you were mentioning, you know, getting the energy from alternative energy sources?
Well, there are an estimated 46 million homes in the country that have inadequate insulation. And one proposal has been to spend, I think it's 30-something billion dollars that would maybe that should have been in the stimulus bill to insulate those homes. That would cut energy consumption in homes by 15% through both heating and air conditioning. So obviously, insulation is important. Reflective roofs and shade trees, like Gloria was talking about, those are important things. So, one thing that happens. When you increase the efficiency of some activity like cooling, either by having better insulation or more efficient equipment that uses less electricity for a given amount of cooling, that doesn't necessarily decrease total electricity consumption. It's kind of And it applies in all parts of the economy. It's kind of a paradoxical thing, but you can have increasing efficiency and increasing consumption.
Because people just use more of whatever it is.
Right. Between 93 and 2005, the efficiency of air conditioning equipment in the country increased by about 28%.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. But at the same time, the amount of energy used to cool the average air-conditioned home increased 37%. This increase in the face of efficiency was related to the increasing size of houses. As you know, the 90s and 2000s have been some of the hottest years on record.
And a lot of McMansions going up with a lot of rooms to air condition, I guess, if that's what you're doing.
Right. And people switching more from room to central air, and the fact that people could see that, hey, I can spend the same amount of money and actually keep the house cooler. So people have turned down. There have been studies showing in Texas that programs for better insulation in houses led to people keeping their thermostats 2 degrees cooler.
Let's go to Andover, Connecticut, and Tom. Tom, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm on the side of the road right now in my car. It's 93 degrees outside, and I'm just watching the cars go by. Not one car. Two questions here, actually. The first one is, not one car has their window open. When I was a kid, there was no air conditioning. I'm just wondering, is it more efficient to drive with, you know, in weather like this, air conditioning on or with the windows open? And the second question is, well, first of all, I do not have air conditioning at home. My window's open,
okay,
and I use a fan. But are they – I hear that building new homes or new home construction is being done with windows that are made not to open, that will not open. Is that
wow. That's a new one to me. Homes with windows, offices, of course. But, Stan, how about it?
Well, this question of in highway travel, whether to have your windows up and the AC on or the windows open is one that has been raised a lot. And naturally, we all wonder about it. And there have been a lot of people look into it. And a lot of these are not highly scientific studies, but it has been tested by all sorts of, you know, engineering groups, and even that MythBusters TV show. They looked at it, and if you take all of those sort of little experiments that have been done, about half of them show that open windows are better. About half show that air conditioning is better. And the main conclusion is you're not really increasing your fuel consumption by using the air conditioning if you're going continuously down the highway at highway speed without interruption. However, in average driving patterns, the National Renewable Energy Lab has done studies that include a mixture of urban and country driving and highways and so forth. On average, over all of that, the air conditioner increases your fuel consumption in the range of 20%. If you're driving a hybrid car, then it can be as high as 60% increase in your fuel consumption. And that doesn't include people sitting in stop traffic in Dallas and Atlanta for long periods in traffic jams, in which case the only useful work the engine is doing is keeping the driver from broiling.
We'll come back and look at this issue of windows, but we've got plenty of Southern listeners just wondering how, for heaven's sakes, they're going to live without AC, if that's what we're talking about. Chuck in Shreveport, Louisiana. Chuck, you are on the air.
Hello. Just wanted to make some points. I think without air conditioning, it would be impossible because of the mosquitoes. We live in the city. Mm-hmm. I guess if you reverse the situation, you wouldn't tell people in Minnesota in January and February, turn off the heat, put on another blanket.
Right.
I mean, and yes, is it okay in some months? But May, June, July, August, and September, we have people dying. I mean, every day you turn on the local news, and it's not just elderly. It's people without air conditioning. It gets so hot. It can still be 90 to 93 degrees at 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Yep.
So I understand your point, but there is some become reality. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks for calling. I mean, in a way, Stan, we've made a reality. Chuck and a whole lot of other people, millions now, live in a part of the United States where the heat is just very high in the summer, and it's going to be hard to make the case that you just get through it like Pueblo dwellers did.
Well, issue of mosquitoes, it's screens, doors, windows that keep mosquitoes out. Mm-hmm. But air conditioning has the effect of luring people inside in the evening. And there was even a study done showing the combination of air conditioning and TV lowers encephalitis rates because it draws people in during the time of the day when mosquitoes are active.
Mm-hmm.
But in the South, as I said, I grew up in the South, and I've in the book I talked to some women who lived in at the very south end of the Florida Peninsula in the days before air conditioning. Mm-hmm. And the screen porch, or in Florida, what they called the Florida room, which was just kind of a glorified great big screen porch that
right.
was kind of a room of the house.
Mm-hmm.
People did live in substantial numbers in the days before air conditioning down there. But what we've done now is to build air conditioning into the structure of the American home in the American city, so that we've created more of a dependence on it.
Talk about what it might take in lifestyle and construction styles to at least reduce some of that AC dependence. Jeremy, Norfolk, Virginia. Jeremy, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
I was born and I spent the first 28 years of my life in and around Atlanta, Georgia. And until I was 17, I never lived in a house that had air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 17 in 96. This wasn't a long time ago.
Right.
And so I think it's relatively new, at least I was growing up, this, you know, the concept of everything has to be air conditioned. But I think now that we've gotten to that point, it's hard to make society kind of go backwards, especially when it comes to comfort. I don't think you're going to be successful in telling people, you know, use the porch swing and the screen doors and open your windows, and yeah, you're going to sweat a lot more. No one wants to do that. No one wants to walk around, you know, sweaty and uncomfortable, even if the discomfort isn't really that great in the long run.
Yeah, Jeremy, thanks for calling. We're coming to the break here, but Stan, how about it? Are you telling people you're going to just have to give it up sooner or later, or is Jeremy right? There's no going back.
Well, I do spend the latter part of the book describing a number of alternatives, some of them old-fashioned, like what we've been talking about, and another one of my favorites, the basement, which is always a good
refuge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of more technological solutions, and even things like totally solar air conditioning, which can be accomplished with almost no moving parts, simply with water absorbing heat from the sun. So there, we don't have to think about simply going cold turkey, so to speak. There are ways to sort of back out of this slowly. But in the past 12 years, residential air conditioning's electricity consumption has increased 100%. It's doubled in 12 years, so something has to be done.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about air conditioning, our maybe addiction to air conditioning, what it costs us, and how we might back away from some of that AC and its costs. Stan Cox is with us from Wichita, Kansas. His book coming out is Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Our Air-Conditioned World. We're going to hear in just a moment from Alicia Silva. Alicia Silva in Seattle, Washington. She's a sustainable building advisor and architect there. I've got lots of comments online here, Stan. Major says, imagine plays or films like Streetcar Named Desire, The Long Hot Summer, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. If AC had been available, He said, sweltering heat becomes a character in its own right. For the sake of art, we need to cut back on the AC. Desiree, she says, I live in Southwest Florida. It's quite hot. We turn our AC off every morning and open the house till about 1 in the afternoon. The breeze is sweet. We can hear the birds and smell the jasmine and gardenias. It's really quite lovely. But they sleep with the AC on. Let's go to Miriam in Salt Lake City, Utah. Miriam, you're on the air.
Hi. This is all very nice and rhetorical and reminds us of the good old days. However,
yes,
back in those days, we didn't have the air pollution that we have now. Here in the Salt Lake Valley, we're notorious for having inversions where people are told, don't go outside.
Right.
You see on the weather reports, what are the air quality reports, you know, from good to red.
Right.
I don't see, now I have year-round allergies and sinus problems and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't have my air on in the summer,
yep,
I'd be sick in bed all the time.
So not just a question of heat and cooling, but of health itself. Miriam, thanks for putting that on the table. Stan Cox, how about it? Miriam's looking at air quality, air pollution, health issues. Take a look outside and inside with us at that front.
And Miriam's plight is a good example of how it's going to be pretty difficult to work our way out of this. And we have to remember that a lot of that pollution that the filter on the air conditioner is trying to take out is coming from coal-fired power plants that are powering the air conditioner and from car engines that are running the air conditioning. Now, air conditioning obviously has been had a lot of benefits to people who need to escape from pollen and other allergens at certain times of the year and keep dust out of the house and reduce the amount of housework.
Mm-hmm.
But it also may have had some reverse effects. For example, there's a hypothesis now that is gaining support that children's lack of exposure in the summertime to beneficial organisms that are in the soil and the outside world may be contributing to much higher rates of asthma and allergy, other problems because of disruption of the immune system. So at the same time, these children probably then have to be kept indoors even more. And so we have yet another one of these vicious cycles that we get into.
Wow. Let's reach out for another perspective here. Alicia Silva joins us from Seattle, Washington, sustainable building advisor and architect. She is a principal at Synergy Design Studio, writes the Building Seattle Green column for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. You can link to her column at our website, onpointradio.org. Alicia, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's a pleasure for me to join the conversation.
Let me just read straight off to you. Here's a Facebook comment from a listener named Tim. He says, we've built our society on air conditioning. Our buildings have no ability to cool themselves. People have lived in the desert for thousands of years. He says, our era of cheap energy has allowed us to build buildings that require AC. Now, Tim says that era is going to end soon, so those buildings will be uninhabitable. It's hard to know which way to turn here, Alicia. Is there a way to handle what we're up against in all this?
No, there's lots of ways, and I think this is a great introduction to what I really want to say to everybody. And my point is that we have been cooling our houses and having thermal comfort for years and years and years, and what has happened is that we have forgotten how nature does it, you know? And it's just a matter of understanding basic principles such as shading, for example, you know? Like, if you read the LEED standards, which is leadership, energy, and environmental design for how to reduce the amount of heat that the buildings gain, sometimes is as easy as just adding albedo with plants, which means like shading with plants. And if you live in a house, you can look which are the walls that are taking the most sun, and just adding plants, is a great alternative to, you know, help reduce the amount of air conditioning that you use by 2 or 3 degrees even, you know. And if you live in a condo and there's a window with a lot of sun exposure and you need to reduce it, adding a lot of plants in that window would totally help, because plants absorb the energy of the sun and they tend to build moisture. So, I mean, one important thing is to understand that nature uses shading for cooling. And then the other resource that nature has is air movement, okay? But there's, of course, you know, even if you don't believe in the global warming and, you know, all the tons of carbon that we're drawing just because of all this air conditioning, if you just think about your health, too, and you were saying that, you know, some people think that they have a lot less health problems when they're inside air conditioning. I totally believe that air conditioning recirculates the air inside your house, and that creates tons of problems because the air that is recirculating doesn't have as much as oxygen.
But if you're living in, Atlanta or Tampa or Shreveport or Phoenix, I mean, you're not going to be comfortable just with shade trees, some plants in the window, and a fan.
No, but for example, there are times of the day or strategies that you can add into your house. I mean, we remodel so much in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, sometimes if you put a transom window that can be open and you can create cross ventilation, that is, you know, a great alternative for places that don't need complete, you know, air conditioning. You know, like sometimes you have this extra room that needs to be cool, but you're not there all the time.
But I wonder about our whole sort of lifestyle as we've come to understand it, and our economy. I mean, where you get up, many people still put on a tie, let's say, go off to work and, you know, work like the devil for 8 or 10 hours. I mean, can you do that with natural cooling, Alicia, or is that part and parcel of the air-conditioned world?
Well, I think, you know, the whole system needs to be changed a little bit. And I think we are going to have to change no matter if we want or don't, because eventually there will be, you know, lack of energy enough to cover all our, you know, air conditioning needs. So, or, you know, what happens if all of a sudden we don't have electricity for 2 hours? If we're prepared and we have shading and we have air flowing in
mm-hmm,
our house,
mm-hmm.
we're going to be a lot better.
Let's get a call from Danny in Montpelier, Vermont. Danny, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. This is a fantastic conversation to be having right now. I'm a professor of architecture at a place called Norwich University, and I teach heating, ventilation, and air conditioning to architecture students, construction management students.
Uh-huh.
And I basically teach that the goal is to design less air conditioning into your buildings. As your guest from Seattle was saying, there are many design solutions that allow it to, us to easier to cool our buildings. And something that was said a little bit, which I think is really important, is this idea of regional solutions. There are ways to cool a house in the desert that's very different than cooling a house, say, in Louisiana. But there are old houses in New Orleans that keep themselves cool in the summertime, just the way that there are old houses in Tucson that keep themselves cool. And one of the things that happened with air conditioning is we started building houses in Texas that look like the houses that people build in New England.
Right.
And they're totally inappropriate for Texas.
So could we make a big enough change in people's comfort to sustain the way we do everything else in our air-conditioned world, Danny? Or are we going to have to change the way we dress, the hours we work, everything else on top of it?
I always point out that the important people in Israel don't show up in public wearing ties, and that's partly because those buildings weren't air-conditioned for a long time. But there are people in Los Angeles who are making new houses without air conditioning, and the one thing that I teach when I teach is there's this idea of what human comfort is. And the engineers and the air conditioners have gotten us to a place where comfort is 70 degrees and a particular relative humidity.
Mm-hmm.
But we've learned, and there's a great writer on the subject. His name is Brown. He wrote a book called Sun, Wind, and Light.
Mm-hmm.
Our idea of comfort is really a much broader range. We can be comfortable up to 80 degrees inside, as your guest from Seattle was saying, if the air is flowing. And you can do this with ceiling fans, you can do this with transom windows, you can do this with a forced stack effect inside the building. there are a lot of solutions. And the good news is they make our architecture better.
But, you know, Danny, stand by. Stan, the problem here in part must be that we've got an awful lot of built infrastructure at this point that's been built on the assumption of air conditioning. Airflow, forget about it. Think how many offices you can't even open the window.
Yeah, if there's one thing I can urge listeners to go and look up, it's something called the adaptive model of comfort, which says that the temperature that we find comfortable, the range, isn't a fixed thing. It's not 72 to 78 degrees. It varies, and it depends on the temperatures and humidities we've been experiencing over the past few weeks or days. And by living constantly in air conditioning, we greatly reduce our heat tolerance. So buildings can be run warmer, and studies have shown in places like Thailand that people who work under natural ventilation find higher temperatures actually more comfortable. And fortunately, the organization of engineers who design heating and cooling have recognized this in recent years and have changed. They have separate standards for naturally ventilated buildings that have a more flexible temperature comfort range.
Well, that may be a change of habit or comfort zones that some Americans have trouble making. Danny in Montpelier, thanks for your call. Let's go to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and Susan. Susan, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm an old-time Southerner who grew up in the South without air conditioning and couldn't sleep at night and have been sick from the heat many times.
Mm-hmm.
And from that experience, I've often thought that if we didn't have air conditioning, the South would empty out again.
Well, maybe that's – is that where we're headed, Stan? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, there have been some recent reports that Phoenix, for example, may start depopulating. It may have a lot to do with the lack of water resources, but it certainly wouldn't be that valley wouldn't have the population it does without air conditioning. And we could well see some revert. The 50 years of southward migration has been interrupted by the economic bust, mm-hmm. but if the economy picks up again, it'll be interesting to see if it continues or stalls or actually reverses and people start heading north.
Susan, thanks for your call. I mean, a long trek to Minnesota may seem like a drastic way to cool off. Kathy in Ashland, Massachusetts. Kathy, you're on the air.
I am. Hi. And thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I love the show. So I'm a low-impact landscape designer.
Okay.
As I drive around the countryside in eastern Massachusetts, I am constantly in despair at the amount of trees that are taken down. We go in and we cut down all the trees before we do commercial, residential, industrial development. The guys who cut the trees are paid in trees, so they
right.
have no incentive not to cut trees.
Right.
The second thing is that if you have trees on your lot, not only are you not contributing to global warming, you're helping keep that carbon sequestered in the tree, but you're allowing for, let's say, evergreens on the north and the east side of your home to keep the harsh winter winds from hitting your home so you don't have to heat it as much. On the south, you keep the deciduous, the trees that lose their leaves, and on the west side, in the summer, they shade your house.
Right.
And in the winter, they allow for solar gain.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, the trees help prevent stormwater runoff. I mean, they do so many things, and the first thing that we do is we go into a piece of land and we chop them all down.
Kathy, that's a powerful point. Let me take it to Alicia. Thanks for calling. I mean, Alicia, the shade was one of the first things you raised here is thinking of the vegetation around our houses just as important as anything else in them.
Exactly. I think both things are important. Of course, the first thing is shading outside the house because that totally changes the amount of cooling that we need because, I mean, you can just it's something that we see every day. You know, when they say the temperature, they say, oh, this is the temperature and this is the temperature under the shade. So you can already see that under the shade, there's already several degrees lower, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, but also inside our house, if you think about the old architecture, for example, the architecture in Granada, there's a lot of fountains, for example. And the fountains are a great, or like, I would say, the ancient version of the evaporative coolers. So sometimes it's as easy as adding, you know, water or more plants into your house, or you can totally change the inside colors of your house. I mean, there is the reason why the lighter colors reflect not only light but also heat. So, I mean, there's a lot of strategies that are really easy that will help you maybe not get rid of your air conditioning, but definitely drop a few degrees down.
I'm trying to think where in my house I could have a gurgling fountain, and a spot doesn't come to mind right offhand, but I may figure one out as this rolls forward. Stan, you mentioned, and we've got people in Florida talking about solar-powered AC. Might that be a way out of this? Is there like an alternative technology that would keep us cool without the same energy cost, or that's not going to offset the cutbacks you're foreseeing?
Well, totally solar air conditioning right now is pretty expensive and has only been implemented for some large buildings. But if electricity really gets expensive, that's one thing that could help. In drier parts of the country, as Alicia said, evaporative cooling helps. And here in the Midwest, we have geothermal cooling.
Well, you paint a picture that looks like there may be more sweat on our brow and different ways of doing a lot of things, including building. It's really fascinating. Stan Cox's new book coming out next month is Losing Our Cool. He joins us today from Wichita, Kansas. Stan, it's just been great having you. Thanks so much for your insights.
Thank you, Tom. I've enjoyed it.
And Alicia Silva in Seattle, Washington, at the Synergy Design Studio there. Alicia, thanks for your time and outlook today.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for being with us. Stay cool one way or another. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.